and it's on page 926 of the Church Bibles. For the message about the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those of us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks desire wisdom, but we proclaim a Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews and foolishness to the Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. For God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. Consider your own call, brothers and sisters. Not many of you are wise by human standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were noble by birth. But God chose what is foolish to the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world and the things that are not, to reduce to nothing the things that are, so that no one might boast in the presence of God. He is the source of your life in Christ Jesus, who became for us wisdom of God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, in order that is written, let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. This is the word of the Lord.
If you're wondering what the table is doing there with the candle and the stones next to it, that is a focus for our intercessions this morning, which Susie is leading. And in our intercessions today, we are commemorating Holocaust Memorial Day, which was this last week. I think Mim has given out the clipboards already, so thank you very much. A couple of weeks ago in my preach, I talked a little bit about story and sharing our story, and said that today, 2 weeks afterwards, I would share my testimony. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to share my story with you in our preaching slot this morning. And one of my favorite Bible verses is in the Old Testament. It's in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 12. Talking about the voice of God and how it comes. And the voice of God can come in all sorts of violent ways, but in the end, after all the violence, it says, after the fire, there came a gentle whisper, and it suddenly stops there. That's probably one of my favorite Bible verses, because I'm the sort of person who likes to listen. Maybe I'm a bit slow at times, as I'm always the listener rather than a man of action. But that voice of God speaking calmly, slowly, and gently, I feel underpins something of who I am. And my testimony speaks of a life that is a bit potted and pitted. Yet always there has been that gentle whisper, and that's what I'm most in tune with. So I was born in London in 1978, grew up in the suburbs of East London. And as London gets bigger and bigger and bigger over the years, the bit we were in is now probably in Kent. My dad was an English teacher. He taught in secondary schools in really deprived areas. And my mum was a nurse, first of all starting off in A&E, and then later, after maternity leave, going into district nursing. And although both my parents were born just after World War II ended, they felt the impact of war on their own parents and their families and their upbringing. We're often shaped by the generations around us and our parents' upbringing and experience. I love my mum, dad, and my family greatly. And I have to remind myself that although I'm shaped by them, I'm myself, I don't have to conform to any particular given notion of identity. When I was about 7, we moved to Gloucestershire, which is where my dad's family come from, and I settled well in school. My upbringing, you could say, was possibly quite strict, shaped by my family. My mother's side of the family are a long line of very devout Roman Catholics. And so that determined that myself and my sister Helen would both be brought up as Catholics. My dad, an atheist from birth and an atheist to this day, I love him still nonetheless, completely agreed with that. And religion was one of those topics that was never discussed. It's a little bit stranger now when we get together as a family, because both myself and Helen, having been brought up Catholics, I'm now a minister in the Church of England, and she's gone over to the Baptist Church. So read into that exactly what you will. But we were taken to Mass every Saturday evening in our local parish church, as my mum didn't like young children running around on Sunday mornings, something I embrace completely. And our local parish priest, he was a dyed-in-the-wool Irishman. Father Lane, probably about that high. He could do Mass in about 30 minutes, including the 10-minute sermon. Something I quite liked at the time, as it meant the torture of being in church on a Saturday evening wasn't something that you were going to have to put up with for too long. So being a Catholic, Mass and the sacraments were always a part of life. It was drummed into us. So, age 7, I was prepared for Holy Communion. I made my first confession when I was 8 years old. I really can't remember what sins I had at the time of 8 years old, but there must have been something. And the priest who was doing it had this smile on his face as I was confessing, because he probably heard exactly the same things from all the classmates as well. And then I was confirmed at age 12. There was no choice. We simply did it, and it was seen as really strange if we didn't. At my school, there were monks and nuns. You do not take nuns lightly. They can be extremely fierce people. The 3 non-Catholics who were in my year at secondary school were seen as really odd, as they didn't receive the sacraments. And that move wasn't easy. I found being surrounded by all these pious monks and nuns quite difficult. They seemed to have it made. They seemed to be just perfect people. And I think maybe the seeds of a call to ministry were being sown from an early age. And then things started to change. Between the ages of 9 and 13, I was hurt both physically and emotionally by people I was supposed to trust. And that has had life-changing impact on me. At different periods of time and in different ways, the hurt was perpetrated by different men. And it ranged from what we'd now call grooming to being exposed to ritual humiliation in front of a class of other people. All people equally scared of one man and one person called to be the victim. Maybe many prayers were said on that day when I was the victim. And over 30 years later, I can't forget, and I never will. Can I forgive? I really don't think I'm in a position to do that at the moment. Will I forgive? Who knows? We're often exposed to a really comfortable version of Christianity, piety, faith, and all that kind of thing. But when our faith is turned on its head and we're left exposed, I don't know sometimes if there is going to be room for forgiveness. So it had a life-changing impact on me. I just went completely into myself, rejected everyone and the whole world around me. Just so great was the hurt that I felt. So, of course, I suffered and ended up leaving school without much in the way of qualifications. And, of course, this was something I kept secret for a very long time, even from my own family. My dad got a job in Sheffield and eventually we as a family moved up there. I was able to go to Sixth Form College, where I did a BTEC in travel and tourism. And after that, at age 18, really wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. So I started off in the hospitality industry. Started off first working for Butlins in Bognor Regis. Maybe I had visions of being a redcoat, but didn't even get through the audition. So ended up working in the off-license. And from there, when the season came to an end, again being at a loose end, I moved back up to Sheffield with my family. And of all places, I managed to get a job in a casino, where I was working in the bar and restaurant, seeing hundreds of pounds changing hands every night. And the casino always wins. I'd always had a love of travel and being in new places. And over time, I started to explore working in the travel industry. And flying at the time was still quite a glamorous sort of thing. So eventually, after some trying, I managed, about 20 years old, to get a job as cabin crew on the planes, which I ended up doing for 6 years. Before 9/11, it was still good fun. We were all young, we got to travel all over the place. We worked with different people all the time. I could be away for several nights at a time, always with a different group of people, and we would quite often socialise together. I could probably tell you so many stories about that, but it would take far too long. After 9/11, yes, things changed, and it wasn't so much fun. But always during that time away, in my hotel room at night, I was always thinking that there's got to be much more to this. And in the hotel, as you find quite often in lots of hotels throughout the world, you'll find a Gideon Bible. And one day, really bored, I just picked it up and started reading it. I can't say it changed my life straight away, but it just seemed to be a comfort when there wasn't much else going on around me. And I used to notice that on my way up to work, I kept going past a small little church, and I had a feeling that one Sunday I should perhaps go inside there. And it was my first introduction to the Church of England. It wasn't advertising itself on the outside. I just thought, there's a church, I've got a feeling I should go in there, and that's what I did. And it was my first encounter with a woman priest. It was my first encounter with lay readers. But the liturgy, what they were doing, was so similar to what I'd known as a child that it felt as though things were gradually starting to come back. And over time, I found my place because that familiarity from childhood was always there. So I began to get involved in things, helping with some of the youth work, and for a time serving as church warden. But always there was this gnawing feeling that there was something more. And it really started to get me down in the end, as I really couldn't work out what it was. Work was routine. Passengers were becoming exceedingly rude. And eventually, every hotel room, no matter where you are in the world, starts to look the same. And the vicar of that church, Reverend Doris, she took me aside one day when I really wasn't sure what was going on. And she just said that she felt that I was called to ordination. And that was something I poo-pooed and dismissed straight away. I'm not holy enough, I'm not clever enough, I don't know my Bible, etc., etc., etc. If there was an excuse, I would find it. And in fact, I was listening to my own negatives instead of the voice of God speaking to me. But those feelings wouldn't go away. And over time, they just started getting stronger. So in the end, I knew I had to take a massive risk. I gave up work. I moved back to my parents. I temped in hospital kitchens for a year. And then I applied to do theology in York as a mature student. I enjoyed the lectures, but producing the academic work was always much harder. And after a lot of searching around, I found a church in York I was happy with. The vicar there at the time became a friend, and it was only after a year of knowing him that I felt brave enough to approach him with what was in my heart. And this time I knew it was Jesus who was speaking to me. The road to ordination is difficult. It's long. It's full of twists and turns, joys and sadnesses. It requires a huge amount of faith. And when things go against you, it's often really hard to discern where exactly the voice of God is speaking in all of that. In the end, in my final year at university, I was accepted for ordination training, and so finished my three-year degree and then went off to Theological College in West Yorkshire, a place called Murfield. It's just outside Huddersfield. And up there is an Anglican monastic community. So there I was, back with the monks again. But this time, I was drawn to the rhythm of prayer. At the time, I didn't know much about the difference between high church and low church. Church, in my experience, had always been one and the same. And on my first night there, after evensong with the monks, all of us new ordinands in our new black cassocks went into a very formal dinner together, and then afterwards down to the common room for coffee and sherry with the principal and the senior monks. And I was suddenly confronted with my fellow ordinands for the first time. And I remember going into a blind panic because there were all these quite well-educated people with very good degrees from places like Oxford and Cambridge and all sorts of places like that, having really in-depth discussions about the amount of lace they were going to wear on their vestments once they were ordained. That completely freaked me out. Grown men talking about lace on what they were going to wear for the future just was not my bag. So I nearly left on the first night, but something, I think again, that still small voice kept me going. In the end, I enjoyed the worship. I enjoyed the smells and the bells because I related to the sensory aspect of it, but the teaching of scripture, I think, was missing for me. So I did my 2 years there, and I was ordained in York Minster by then Archbishop Sentamu, and I did my curacy in Hull, in the western part of the city, near the university. There is a place called the Orchard Park Estate, which is one of the most deprived areas of the country in which to live. And I absolutely loved it there. And one of the things I noticed, I was in a very high church environment at the time. I always noticed how my brothers and sisters in the more low or evangelical churches always seemed to be quite a bit happier than me. But I took what I learnt. I did 3.5 years there as a curate, having to go around in my cassock most of the time with a big stiff Roman collar and being called father by everyone, which I absolutely despised. I took all that to my first incumbency in Cheadle. I was there for about 3 years, just over 3 years, so this area of the country is already slightly familiar to me. And then when I felt that came to a natural end, I decided, lonely as I was at the time, to move a bit closer to my family. My parents by this time had moved to Norfolk, which is where my sister and her family have lived for 20-something years. So when my parents retired, as my sister has two children, it made sense for them to be closer to her, so I followed. But Staffordshire has always felt like home to me. And I believe that when Becky and I met 4 years ago now, it was one of those God-given moments. And I've always felt I've got more of a home in this part of the country than I did in rural Norfolk, where I didn't speak the language, I didn't fit in, and it's very flat. There's no challenge, You walk for miles and it's just fields and fields and fields. So coming here, in some ways felt like coming home. It also felt like the beginning of a new challenge. And there was always the voice of God speaking to me. And I believe that my love for God continues to grow, and I hope that will always be the case. After 30-something years, having had to confront my past, I now find I enjoy my life. Both the sweet and the bitter have come my way, but I do believe that my life experiences, both the good and the bad ones, have helped to shape who I am. So why did I choose to give something of my testimony this morning? I do it because I'd like you to know a little bit more about me. Sharing stories is one of the ways in which we learn about each other. Maybe you'll feel encouraged to share your story with me. Not necessarily in public, I certainly wouldn't ask you to do that, but as a conversation, because as I said right at the start, I always love to listen. Testifying is affirming for me. I know my place as God's child, and I know that I want to grow more and more into the person who tells others about Jesus and helps to show them the way. So that's me. I look forward to hearing about you. Thank you.